So I want to start today in our sermon by admitting that being a pastor, I know that in my relationship with all of you, there are some things that can be a little bit strange and weird. In particular, for today, I'll admit that it is a little bit different that as a pastor, part of my job is to be able to talk with all of you about how we can experience God and how our faith can be meaningful in our daily lives, in our work, in our relationships. But also there is this limitation in that it's just true that I can only relate probably to all of you so far, because making connections in your lives with jobs that don't necessarily have you automatically talking about God all the time, or relationships where, you know, when I have a relationship with people and as soon as I tell them a pastor, they're going to think certain things about me and about religion and how God is going to play into our interactions. And that's not true for all of you. And so we can talk about things and how God's spirit coming into our lives, how our faith trying to act it out in our daily lives can look and feel and what it's like to go through that. But I'll admit, you might hear us talking about those things sometimes and say, you know what, sure, Pastor Rob, it's real easy for you to say about talking about God. Like, you are around the church all the time. You get to do this all the time. It's not as easy for all of us and all the things that we're juggling. And that is fair, and it's right, and that's fine. I have had a few experiences over time that have helped me relate to that a little bit. And the thing is, I do try really hard to think about that gap, to take it seriously, to listen to you, to connect with you, to understand. Hopefully it does feel like when we talk about things that they still feel relevant. But I admit, like, that's part of what we do. But I try to connect some of those. And some of my own experience, when Wendy and I first moved here from California, we were doing actually a job together that was like a total of about 60 hours between the two of us. And so I decided she was doing it a little bit more full time. I was doing a little bit more support. And so I wanted to go find some other things to do to keep busy and to make a little bit more money as we were transitioning. And so that job that I did was, some of you may remember the little smart cars that had like blue on them. They're called Car2Go, and you could like pick them up anywhere on the street and drive them somewhere else. They don't have them anymore, but a friend of mine from high school was working for them. And so I was like connecting with people that I had known before. And he was like, you know, you can come help us out with some of this stuff if you just want to have something easy and fun. And so my job was basically to do community interactions and community promotion for the cars that people could adapt. And so this is kind of a more normal job. There wasn't God church stuff built into it all the time. And some of the things I remember about what it was like to still think about carrying my faith with me in those circumstances was, one, I was working with a lot of people who were also kind of in times of transition. Often it was people in college or immediately out of college that were also doing some of these community promotion things. And so there was a lot of them kind of talking about, like, oh, what am I going to, like, they didn't see this as their ultimate career. Like, what am I going to do next? And what's it like to kind of struggle with this season of life? As you might expect also, I know some of us have those things where we'll have conversations with people. And a lot of, especially at that life stage, it wasn't my life stage, I couldn't necessarily connect, but I understood, was like, yeah, we're going out to the club, we're going out drinking, we're, you know, sometimes they'd be a little crass or whatever. And I know that for some of us, sometimes that's a difficult way to connect with people and think about carrying our faith too. But for me, one of the things I really tried to do in particular was to say, you know, we could just sit here at this table or in this booth and there's downtime, and I could either just sort of say, I don't want to hear all of your weird, crazy stories that I can't relate to as a dad anymore. Let's just be quiet and kind of pass the time or whatever. But I thought one thing that I can do is I can really connect with them as people. And I don't just want to kill time. I don't just want to dismiss who they are if I can't connect with them. I'm going to listen. I'm going to see, like, understanding what it's like to go through a transitional period. And maybe I can talk with them and remembering that season for myself. And that could be a way that I could bring love and connection and support to them. Also, a thing that became a really big deal for me with Car2Go is thinking about, like, how can God's values come into this business model or this transportation option? And having worked with homeless people and people with transportation barriers a lot before in church jobs and in other ministry, I knew that hypothetically, having the option of being able to have transportation that you could be in control of, that you could get around with quickly, but that you didn't have to commit to buying an entire car all the time could be helpful if Cartago is willing, especially to interact and to seek out people who are having transportation barriers. Because I knew a lot of people who were like, it'll take me 8 hours today to catch all the different buses to go around to all the different things just to do like a couple appointments to help me get by, because one's on this side of town, one's on that side of town. They both take like 3 bus changes. And so it's helpful, but like if I could just jump in a car for a few dollars and just drive there directly, not wait, that could be helpful. But admittedly, you know, our main marketing strategy was like college students and people who were more well off, who didn't necessarily need this as their transportation. It was like, well, when I go to a restaurant and I want to have a couple drinks, I'll get in a car to go so that I can still drive myself there, but then I'm going to take a cab home, and then I don't have to leave like my car in front of the restaurant on the street parked or whatever. So it was more like problem solving for people who were still basically okay was our main marketing approach. And so I really wanted to encourage, like, how could this be more of a difference maker for more types of people? And it wasn't always an easy conversation to have. That was part of what my job got to be. But it was a struggle to feel like this is something I care about, and I want this value to come through in this thing that I'm doing in my life. But it's not always easy. People don't always see it the same way or get it the same way. So those are some of the ways that I've struggled with it myself. And so today we're continuing in our God in the Everyday for Everyone sermon series. And we'll be looking throughout the next few weeks at stories of people that are not our obvious heroes that normally come up in sermons and Sunday school classes. We'll talk about feelings that are expressed in different passages of the Bible that we can relate to in our everyday lives, but that, again, may not feel like, oh, those are the most spiritual type of feelings. And so we talk about them in sermons or in studies or other things at church all the time. But we can see that God really does want us to learn from that, and that it's good to have those relatable people and experiences that we can lift up. And so Nicodemus, the man who is brought up in his interaction with Jesus today in our reading from the Gospel of John, he's another one that we can learn from. Now, I'll admit, he's not sort of your regular just person on the street guy in his day and time that we might see in some of our other things today. Nicodemus had a pretty prominent position. He was a Pharisee, and he was on the Jewish council, which meant that he was sort of like in the high ups of government. He could make rules. He could be a part of judging big disputes, and he would be a part of figuring out how the Jewish people are going to get along with the Romans by dealing with the Roman leaders and generals and things directly. So on the one hand, if we hear Pharisee, we might think, oh, he's a religious person to begin with. Maybe a little bit like Rob, but in the temple or something like that. But this was actually more sort of relatable jobs like legal work or politics or management or teaching and communications. All of those would be built into this role that Nicodemus had on the Jewish council. So he's a really interesting person, actually, I think, that we can find a way to relate to, because in this interaction with Jesus, he's trying to figure out, all right, I'm starting to see this ministry that he's doing. I'm getting to have a dialogue with him. I want this to stay with me and mean something for where I go forward. But I'm not going to be a disciple who hangs out with Jesus all the time. So this is me blending kind of my faith and what I do in my other work and relationships. And I think that that's something, and what Nicodemus is struggling with, is something that a lot of us could relate to about how we figure out for ourselves in our day-to-day life. We can say, you know, I'm not going to be in full-time ministry, but I do want my faith to mean something in all of the things that I do. But, you know, it's not always easy to know exactly how to do that. It's not obvious. It's not simple. And so that's the thing I hope we really connect with Nicodemus today. I do think that there are some really compelling and kind of big picture lessons that Jesus is trying to impart to Nicodemus, and that we ourselves as readers can continue to learn from for our own lives too. And so I want you to think, as we talk about this, what would this big lesson, how would that play out in my life if I can see a little bit how it plays out for Nicodemus? And so in the first big lesson that I want us to take away from, we need to know that right before this passage where we see Nicodemus talking to Jesus, Jesus has just been in the temple. And he was going in there and turning over all the tables in the main courtyard. He's saying, you've turned this into like a market. You've commodified your faith. He's kicking everybody out. He's making a big scene. You just come here and you sell people stuff. Powerful people come here and they comfort themselves about the ways that they rob and mistreat people in their day-to-day practices. And they say, well, as long as I act holy here, then everything's fine. That's not what God likes. We got to stop all of this. And so this makes a big scene, and it's very confrontational. And in fact, it's confrontational to, well, people like Nicodemus and the Jewish council. Those are the ones that would be most called out by what Jesus was doing. And so we don't know for sure exactly what Nicodemus' motivations were in coming to talk to Jesus. The Bible doesn't say it exactly. It could have been, especially if he's coming late at night, it could be that he's coming as a representative of the Jewish council, who are maybe a little bit angry and wanting to push back at Jesus. He's almost coming like a spy to check out, like, what's Jesus' deal, who just did this big thing in the temple. It could also be, though, that he's coming late at night because he says, you know what, actually, I kind of think Jesus is on the right track. I felt like the council and the people in the temple have had these problems the whole time, too, and so I don't want them to know, but I want to come and talk to Jesus and find out more. So we don't know exactly what it is, but there is something going on there a little bit below the surface because of what Jesus has just done. And so the lesson we can take from this especially is that a way that Nicodemus is starting to integrate his faith and his spirituality into his daily life is that he's making sure to come to these situations that impact his regular daily activities with a spirit of curiosity and as a disciple or as a learner. And this is different than how he could have come. He could have come as an accuser, right? Me and the Jerusalem council, we're going to get you, Jesus. We just want you to know we saw it, we know where you live, and we're going to come after you, right? That could be one way that you could do it instead. But he's also not coming arrogant. He's not saying, if he was coming because he's interested in what Jesus was doing, he's not saying, yeah, Jesus, thanks for finally saying what I already have figured out and I know all about. Coming curious and learning. And this is something that we can see Jesus clearly wants to encourage and draw out of Nicodemus more. Because as Nicodemus kind of eases into the conversation, right, kind of buttering Jesus up and, some soft conversation, he says, you know, like, Jesus, we know that you must be from God because you've been doing these signs. Well, Jesus doesn't say, yeah, Thanks for coming in, but I know you're probably just kind of keeping your eye on me, and you're only saying that because you don't want me to be on edge or nervous. He also doesn't say, yeah, you know what? I am pretty awesome, so why don't you go and get your buddies on board? Conversation done, right? We're all good? No, he wants to draw more and more out of Nicodemus. He says, let's go deeper. Let's get you something that you can think about even more. Let's see if we can learn and not just keep you where you are. And here's the thing, we know that in most of our interactions, whether it's at work, in our personal relationships, and people that we run into, just in our regular things that we go about during our daily lives, that there are certain people where it's clearly expected and allowed that we have different types of behavior. On the one hand, there are people that we know, these are the ones that we get told or encouraged, you should ignore them. You should push them aside. You can treat them like they're not worth very much because they're not doing the right things. They don't look the right way. They're, you know, not in the right crowds of things. They're not doing the things that you feel like are best. But on the other hand, that we will have people that we feel like I'm supposed to defer to them. I'm supposed to bend over backwards to do what they want. I'm supposed to say that they're really great, even if there are some things that I wonder if they're doing the right things. In this interaction, we can see that Nicodemus is learning from Jesus. Don't just get sucked into the momentum of all of those expectations and pressures of how you're going to interact with people or situations. Bringing your spirit to your daily life involves letting go of those pressures and expectations and looking for God to say, look deeper. See someone through my eyes. Don't make those assumptions that way. You can treat people with God's perspective of love and wanting all creation to thrive, and also of sometimes saying, especially if people are mistreating people, are misusing power, that we can invite them into something better that, again, helps everyone be in a good place as God has created us and intends us. Another lesson that we can learn from Nicodemus and what Jesus tells him is that we should be ready and we should even look for our spirituality in our everyday lives to bring us to whole new perspectives about how things should work in our lives. And it's not going to be simple and easy. Something like being born again and Nicodemus continue questioning, like, is this really what you mean? Is this really what you mean? It's not just being a little bit unique. It's starting all over to be able to interact with the world in a whole new way. Now, I get that this idea can seem like a lot. It sounds dramatic and maybe not actually very connected to day-to-day life, like we have to do something that is really crazy and different than we normally would in our normal rhythms. We might think that it will require something so disruptive that it would be overwhelming for even us to try. And we should take seriously that just in this conversation, God really does want us to think about how much can our new life, how much can God breaking into our world really make a significant difference? We should stretch ourselves and expect that that's part of what salvation and encounter with God is like. We can also remember that not every single moment in our lives is really crazy or really dramatic. Each point has its own weight and size. And so the point is not so much to just try to do something really crazy and dramatic all the time. The point is to come into each moment as it is, but from a different angle that's rooted in God's values rather than what is, again, most typically expected. As it turns out, Nicodemus becomes kind of this regular supporting character throughout the Gospel of John. And so we can see how he took this encounter with Jesus here in chapter 3 and did try to live it out in regular ways in what he's dealing with. So for instance, in chapter 7, there's a moment when the rest of the Jerusalem council has been watching Jesus starting to get popular with miracles and teachings, and they're really mad about what he's doing, what he's saying, and they're trying to agitate crowds to go after Jesus and kill him. And so the whole momentum of this circumstance that Nicodemus finds himself in is that the council is basically saying, hey, you have to show us how holy you are because you know Jesus is a bad guy who's doing the wrong things about saying how God works. And also, you need to be a political team player because Jesus is getting popular, but we want to make sure that we show we have more power than Jesus does no matter how popular he gets. So everybody's got to be on board with this. And so the thing is, if Nicodemus would have just said, I'm going to live my faith in this moment by saying, well, you know what? I say Jesus is right. You're wrong. I choose him over you. Probably in that moment, they just would have said, we're sweeping you up too. You're right in front of us. Let's get you and try you and execute you or who knows what else that they also wanted to do to Jesus. So for Nicodemus, the approach of bringing spirituality is not trying to do something dramatic. It's saying, what in this moment can I come at from a different angle from God's perspective? So instead, he tells them, you know what, everybody? We can't just send this group after Jesus without a trial, because then we as the council would become lawbreakers. Our law says you're not supposed to go after people without that. And so then we would be making ourselves unholy, and not only that, we would be delegitimizing our leadership to the rest of the people. Maybe you want to stop and think for a second. So again, he comes at his regular rhythm of life from a different perspective, and he brings a deep spiritual value to this earthly moment to the point that even his opponents cannot resist the fact that argument, and that helps Jesus and also helps them maybe think of things in a different way themselves. I had an experience kind of like this of trying to come at things in a different way myself when I was working at the health center down at Faith Mission a few years ago. Because I wasn't super scared of computers and technology, I kind of by default became our electronic health program super user in the office because we had a lot of other people that did not like using technology. And so it's a big learning curve, and it wasn't easy for our office. And the program that we used was often kind of buggy. And so I spent actually a lot of my time basically like, all right, what's not working for somebody? I'll work on it a little bit, see if I can figure it out, and then I'll call their customer service. And like a lot of customer service, as you would imagine, it was not always a very good experience. It didn't seem like it was even set up to actually solve problems. It'd be like, I'd call and say, this doesn't seem to be working. I'd talk to a representative who was like, okay, tell me what's not working like 3 times over and over again. And then I'll say, well, maybe I'll escalate it and somebody else will call you in like 2 days or something like that, right? Like all this customer service now, it doesn't feel like it's actually meant to solve problems. It just feels like someone's going to talk to you, hope that you won't get angry and just maybe delay things. And I know that there's a lot of things that we experience that way. And so that's what it was like. And so I would often get very frustrated and be like, why can't we just sort this out? But I realized more and more as I was getting stuck in that, that for that person, it also was not a very good experience. Their job was not setting them up to be helpful. Their job was just to, like, basically say, all right, tell us what it is. I'll try to delay you. I'll try to push you off on somebody else, but that person won't call you for a long time, and there's only so much I can do. And so they probably then had people like me all day telling them, you're no good. Some of them, the company was an international company, so some of them would sometimes be from other countries. And I know that for a lot of us, like speaking to someone when we're frustrated and having a hard time, that we sometimes have to repeat each other, or like there's accents and things like that that are getting in the way. Like that gets frustrating too. And so we spout off at the customer service people because the company is like justifiably frustrating us. But they weren't responsible for that. They're not the ones who mess it up. They're not the ones who it's really their fault that they can't help me if they weren't trained to do the thing that helps. So does it really help to have me just spout off at them and be mad and make their day horrible? Like, I can't imagine if that was my day. And every single person I talked to was like, you're a jerk. You can't do anything. And that was my day. I would hate that. And so I realized, like, how can we come at this differently? And so one of the things that I tried to do is if we reach the point where they couldn't help from like their normal step-by-step book, I'd say, well, what do you know to do? Like, maybe what I've asked somebody else is going to have to call me back, but like, you just tell me something. Like, let's just be creative. Let's completely get off book and see if we can figure something out. And then let's like just sort of chat and be like, oh, I'm really sorry. Like, I know I'm kind of sharp today, but I'm just frustrated. Like, how are you feeling today? And so having these sins of like little moments of like bond and support and trying to not just get stuck in the rut of the way the system was trying to force us to, but come at it from a different way, we did often find some solutions that we wouldn't have found if we just went through the script. I did come away feeling less frustrated. I hope that they did too, because I didn't want to just get stuck in that same thing. And those are the types of things that we can try to find for ourselves, like Nicodemus did. Another lesson that I think we can take from what's happening with Jesus and Nicodemus is this image that Jesus gives of the Spirit being like God's wind or breath. And by the way, in both Hebrew and Greek, Spirit, wind, and breath are all kind of like homonyms. That's the same word for all of them. And so we really do see that linked together, even at the root of language. And for me, this gives this picture of Jesus saying, go out in the ocean of your life. Figure out how you can ride the waves of whatever your circumstances are. Know that maybe you're in a vessel together with other people that you share life with. Figure out how that is, but be ready, like a sail, to catch God's wind and go in the way that God knows is best in a certain circumstance when God shows up, even if it's a course that others don't understand and wonder what values are driving you. Nicodemus, again, does this himself at another time. He pops up in the Gospel of John after Jesus has been executed on the cross with the consent of people that Nicodemus had been walking with throughout his life, other members of the Jewish council. Nicodemus goes and instead of siding with the council, joins with some of Jesus' followers. And not even all of Jesus' followers, because some of them were too scared to even do anything because they knew if Jesus got executed and people know I followed him, I might be next. But Nicodemus went against the way the political winds would have been blowing. This was not his like smart move at the time. But he knew that bringing the Spirit into that moment was to walk into the struggle and pain of the everyday in that moment and to help in bringing Jesus care and dignity by cleansing his body and preparing it and taking it for burial. At that moment, as best as he could, even though he didn't even understand what was going to come next in the resurrection, there's no sign that Nicodemus anticipated that was part of it, but he still knew, this is how I can bring my faith to this moment, even if it's risky. I'm going to follow God's wind and not just the political winds to have my finger up for. And the last thing I want us to hear in the interaction that Jesus has with Nicodemus and what it means for us to carry our faith in our daily life is something that may have sounded like a challenge and almost like a pushback or an accusation from Jesus in the passage. But I think we can even hear it rather as an encouragement for what it's like, even when we stumble along and it's not easy for us to bring our spirituality and our faith to our daily choices. Remember when Jesus says, "You don't know earthly things, so how will you even understand heavenly things?" So being told that we don't understand something can feel very critical and discouraging. But when something is spoken to us in love, that type of statement instead becomes an invitation to learn, to experience, to grow, and to transform. So when Jesus says this, I think that he's actually saying, we start with our experience of God's kingdom in the everyday, in God's kingdom coming on earth as it is in heaven. It's normal for us to start in just the normal way we do things, and then just find where we can to connect with God in it. And that doesn't mean that we're doing something wrong if we're not doing something super churchy all the time or right at first. We're starting with earthly things, and by going through that with God, it will bring us to the heavenly things. We're being encouraged in a process of growing and experiencing and learning and getting to there. The point is not to try to get away from our regular daily life, and not to try to be churchy or holy all the time in this way that's different from our normal experiences. And in that way, we say, oh, now I can be more heavenly. In fact, Jesus is telling us the point is to make ourselves open to learn and to follow God in ways that will stretch us in any given moment in regular life. But that when we do that earthy stuff, it will create a process by which we will, in fact, experience and grow in salvation life and have heaven on earth as it is with God. And I want us to hear, as we try to do this, by the way, the Psalm 119 verses that we read as a prayer that can encourage us in moments and reminders to give us a boost as we try to do this. To me, it sounded like something Nicodemus would have said to himself maybe before he went into Jesus or after he had encountered with Jesus and then repeating it back over and over again. And so it can be useful to us in our daily lives too. We hear words like, I've sought your face and I've turned my steps to your statutes. And that's like us, Nicodemus, saying, I'm going to come as a learner. I'm willing to turn, or repent is the other meaning of that word, to this new life. I'm going to have some spiritual focus in my daily life, and I know that that can come even into my earthly experiences. The words, even when I'm bound by ropes, I will not forget your law. Just like my customer service calls or Nicodemus trying to navigate the politics of the Jewish council, we know that there are expectations that constrain our abilities to automatically connect salvation life to what we're doing day to day. But we can still be faithful to follow and have God show us what's this unique perspective you can come at instead. At midnight, I rise to give thanks for your righteous laws. Now, this sounds a lot like Nicodemus, right? He came in the middle of the night to come and talk to Jesus. And so that helps encourage us to say, find some of those times. That often it's helpful to have a special practice or special moment where you can reflect on what it's like in your day-to-day life to bring some light into moments of darkness that you and others experience. Have that thing that you do, that you go about, you're going about your regular practices, but to help connect that faith, know that there's something that you can step aside and recharge with Jesus. And finally, I am a friend to all who fear you and follow your precepts. Jesus, I'm ready to see the world and the people in it and their worth differently than I'm encouraged to otherwise. I'll focus most on connecting with them and seeking an experience of new birth and a new way of going through life that's different than all of the ways that people tell me. Go after those impressive people. Try to be powerful. Show off how you're holy, rather than just living in God's values and expectations with the people near you who need you the most. And I want to encourage us again as we go through this, as we think of ways to do this in our own lives, that there are seeds of how God has been doing that with us already, having this posture of learning, seeing the world differently, trying to bring faith into things that we might not automatically expect it. Arlene, when you mentioned the battle with what Ron is dealing with his insurance and not being able to get the surgery, that's having that view of saying, that needs solved. Someone is not being seen the way that they need to, not getting the compassion. There's got to be something that God can come in and that I can walk alongside somebody in that circumstance. When Lisa does a great job of lifting up prayers for those struggling, even all across the world, like how you've helped us lift up the women in Iran consistently throughout the fall. That is having that same new perspective and saying, I want God in that stuff that seems like it's just earthly and that there's not this obvious solution. And if we have that perspective, maybe we can find ways to live that out ourselves too. Katie, I remember one of the first things that we did together when I came here in the first few months was responding to the George Floyd attack. And in your position saying, we know that police misconduct and violence is bad. We want to respond to it to show that there are better ways of operating in a community. And so we walked together, we did the protest together, and we continue to look out for that and pray for that to happen. Those are great examples too. Jeannie and Krista have recently helped us remember that we can destigmatize mental illness and walk with people in those circumstances. We have lots of other ways that we remember the dignity and beauty and strength of those who are often overlooked or cast aside, which might mean people in addiction, it might mean people in prison, it might mean people who have developmental disabilities in Goodwill, it might mean people who live in retirement communities. All of those things, we're finding ways to see people differently and bring God to them when it might not be obvious otherwise. So let's keep doing that together. Those are great examples of how we can start having this process of bringing our faith and our spirituality in our regular lives. And we can use that to encourage each other to find more ways, more things that we can see and share with each other and get support from each other to do that more and more. And in so doing, I know that we will experience even that dramatic rebirth into salvation life on earth as it is in heaven. We'll go in that spirit into our time of offering, and I look forward to doing that with all of you in coming days and weeks.